Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Studs Accessories Limited Q2 FY26 earnings conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in a listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing the star key followed by zero. Please note this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Joseph George from IIFL Capital. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Steve. Good afternoon, everyone. On behalf of IIFL Capital, I welcome you all to the 2Q FY26 results conference call of Studs Accessories Limited. I also welcome the management team of Studs Accessories. We have with us Mr. Siddharth Khurana, Managing Director, Manish Mehta, Chief Financial Officer, and other members of the senior management team. Now, I'll hand over the call to the management to take it forward. Over to you, Siddharth.
Thank you, Joseph. Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining Studs Accessories Limited Q2 and H1 financial year 26 earnings conference call. I hope you had a chance to go through our financial results and investor presentation, which are available on the company's website and on the stock exchanges. I am joined today by Mr. Manish Mehta, CFO, and Mr. Bharat Goyal, VP Finance and Investor Relations, and SGA, our investor relations advisors. We truly appreciate your time and interest in joining us today to discuss our performance for the quarter ended September 30, 2025. First and foremost, I would like to sincerely thank all of our investors for the overwhelming response and the trust they have shown in Studs Accessories Limited. We were successfully listed on both the NSE and BSE on 7 November 2025, following an IPO of rupees 455 crores via offer for sale. This marks our first earnings call post-listing. I would like to take this opportunity to speak not only about our quarterly performance but also about our journey, our operating philosophy, and the business fundamentals that define who we are. It is important for us that you understand Studs from how we started to how we evolved into the world's largest helmet manufacturer by volume. Our story began five decades ago as a modest partnership firm in a garage built around a simple but profound belief: road safety is not optional but essential, and every rider deserves access to a high-quality, reliable helmet. At that time, the Indian two-wheeler market was still developing, and safety awareness was limited. Helmets were viewed more as a formality than as a life-saving product. But even in those early days, we believed that India would eventually become a market where global quality protective gear would be respected and demanded. This belief guided our approach to design, manufacturing, and materials, even when the industry itself had not yet matured. Studs, our flagship brand established in 1975, has been nurtured for nearly five decades and today stands as one of India's most widely recognized helmet brands, serving millions of riders across the mass and mid-market segments. This journey progressed further in 1983 with the incorporation of Studs Accessories Limited, marking a shift from an entrepreneurial venture to a professionally governed manufacturing organization and laying the foundation for the structured growth, technological investment, and strong quality systems ahead of the industry norms. Through the 1980s and the 1990s, we continued to reinvest in our manufacturing processes, equipment, and people, deepening our understanding of materials, safety standards, consumer needs, mold-making, finishing process, and supply chain complexity. With every iteration, we enhanced our products and operations, gradually building a reputation for reliable, high-quality helmets at affordable price points. As India's two-wheeler population expanded and helmet usage gradually gained momentum, Studs emerged as a trusted and recognizable brand among daily commuters. As our journey unfolded, our vision expanded beyond serving the mass market. We wanted to build a multi-brand portfolio that addressed diverse riders' needs and across all price points. As the market evolved and premiumization trends accelerated globally, we identified a clear gap in India for high-specification international quality helmets that could compete with global brands. To address this gap, we launched SMK in 2016, a premium brand designed to meet and exceed European and international standards. SMK was not just a branding exercise. It represented our growing design and engineering capabilities, gave us a platform to showcase technology-rich features, superior materials, and advanced aesthetics, and over the years has grown rapidly, gaining traction within India's premium helmet market as well as multiple international markets. This further elevated the overall brand equity of Studs. Across these two brands, we built a wide and deep design portfolio. Today, we offer more than 240 helmet styles and designs covering full-face, modular, open-face, flip-up and flip-off models, off-road and adventure helmets, along with a widening range of riding accessories. This broad spectrum is the result of decades of product development experience, deep consumer insights, and our ability to respond quickly to evolving design trends. This extensive design library translates into a significantly large product catalog of more than 19,000 SKUs. Such scale and variety give us strong market coverage across user segments, geographies, and riding behaviors, while enabling quick refresh cycles. We refresh our product portfolio every year, launching around 7 to 8 new models, along with multiple graphic variants. Our development cycle is structured and efficient, with an ideation to production timeline of approximately 9 months for Studs helmets and 14 months for SMK helmets. Alongside this range, our pricing architecture reflects our broader consumer coverage. Studs helmets priced between Rs. 875 and Rs. 4000 address the mid and mass market, with key export markets including Philippines, Indonesia, Africa, Latin America and Central America. SMK helmets ranging from Rs. 3000 to 12800 target the premium segment with strong presence across Europe, ASEAN countries, North and South America and Africa. Our OEM journey began in 2006 and we now supply to leading two-wheeler manufacturers including Honda, Hero, Royal Enfield and Yamaha. Complementing this is our strong presence across e-commerce marketplaces, our own websites, CPCs, CSDs and our EBO network, which acts as a brand experience center. Strengthening our presence in export markets and our success in domestic OEM market, we began manufacturing for renowned global brands such as Daytona for the US market and O'Neill for Australia, US and Europe, significantly broadening our OEM export credentials. Our domestic footprint spans traditional distributors, exclusive brand outlets, large format retail chains, OEM partnerships, institutional suppliers, government channels, and a rapidly growing online ecosystem covering e-commerce and quick commerce platforms. Beyond helmets, we are continuously expanding into adjacent categories. We commenced bicycle helmet manufacturing in 2019, marking an expansion beyond motorized two-wheelers. Our portfolio now includes riding gear, luggage, motorcycle apparels, eyewear, and a range of protective accessories, categories that complement our core and offer strong long-term potential. Given this breadth, we cater to diverse rider segments from first-time commuter riders seeking affordability and dependability to enthusiasts who look for performance, high-spec materials, aerodynamic shapes, integrated Bluetooth features, and international safety certifications. I will talk a little bit about our manufacturing footprint and vertical integration. A key enabler of this expanding product portfolio is our in-house manufacturing capability. Over the years, we expanded our footprint in a calibrated manner. In 2009, we had set up our first manufacturing facility, and from 2010, we expanded aggressively, and we set up 3 more manufacturing facilities, including in-house EPS and in-house screen printing capabilities in Facility 4. All these 4 facilities are currently functional. Also, to meet future demand, our 5th manufacturing facility is under construction and is expected to start production in quarter 1 of financial year 27. Vertical integration remains one of our greatest strengths. We invested early in developing in-house capabilities because safety products demand precision, repeatability, and stringent quality control. Our ecosystem includes EPS manufacturing and in-house mold making shop for developing and refining new designs, decal manufacturing, robotic and automated painting lines, hard coating units, metallizing facilities, fabric stitching units, and conveyorized assembly lines. These capabilities are complemented by our in-house helmet testing lab certified by the Vehicle Certification Agency, allowing extensive testing for global standards. We remain fully compliant with safety-sensitive certifications including ISO, ISI, DOT, EC 2206, and the IEC. This integrated approach provides multiple advantages: tighter cost controls, strong quality assurance, quicker turnaround on new models, and the ability to respond to regulatory changes without external dependence. This strong in-house and vertically integrated setup is supported by our innovation engines, a 75-member in-house design and development team that continuously tracks global design trends, enhances fit and comfort, and integrates advanced technologies into our helmets. Their capabilities are strengthened by collaborations with leading European design firms. The European partner focuses on conceptualizing helmet platforms and specializes in full-face and flip-up designs with integrated Bluetooth. Further, to strengthen our technological capabilities and meet new-age customer demand, we set up an in-house electronics lab in 2021. Combined, these capabilities ensure that our products remain globally competitive in styling, ergonomics, and technology. About market opportunity. Industry tailwinds continue to strengthen the long-term opportunity. Despite India being the world's largest two-wheeler market, helmet penetration still remains far below global levels. Globally, the average number of helmets per two-wheeler is 1.52, whereas in India it stands at 0.6, indicating substantial long-term headroom for growth. Growing disposable incomes, rising safety regulations, design awareness, and shorter replacement cycles of 3 to 5 years are accelerating demand for both mass and premium helmets. Now I'll move on slightly to our performance. In October, we entered into a strategic engagement with Decathlon, adding a marquee global brand to our customer portfolio. Under this engagement, we will fulfill Decathlon's India requirements for bicycle helmets initially. This engagement highlights our robust manufacturing capabilities, adherence to global quality standards, and our increasing recognition as a trusted manufacturing partner for leading international brands. We are currently investing in the required molds, and the commercial production is expected to commence by the end of Q4 financial year 26. In parallel, the board has approved initiatives to strengthen our international presence and enhance brand visibility. As part of this, we are in the process of establishing a new warehouse in Spain. This facility will act as a strategic logistics base for Europe and is expected to meaningfully improve regional distribution capabilities, service levels, and delivery timelines, support deeper market access, and facilitate the launch of additional product categories across our export markets. Additionally, we have recently set up a dedicated IT office in Gurugram. This initiative will enable us to tap into a wider talent pool, enhance our digital capabilities, and further advance technology-driven initiatives across product development, operations, and customer engagement. Strategic priorities and future roadmap. Looking ahead, our strategic direction is anchored around four broad pillars. First, deepening our global presence by expanding our network, improving service levels, and strengthening collaborations with international distributors supported by regional subsidiaries. Second, strengthening our premium product portfolio. SMK remains a core growth driver, and we are developing premium helmets under the Studs brand to cater to rising aspirations. Third, growing our niche segment of motorcycle accessories, riding gear, luggage, motorcycle apparels, eyewear, and protective accessories, categories that complement our core and offer higher margin potential. Fourth, driving digital transformation by strengthening our e-commerce platform, enhancing digital marketing, and exploring opportunities for a dedicated mobile application to improve direct customer engagement. Looking ahead, we remain confident in our long-term growth trajectory and have articulated a revenue aspiration of more than 1,000 crores by financial year 30. This growth is expected to be driven by multiple structural levers, including an increasing contribution from premium and higher value products, continued organic growth in the domestic two-wheeler market, and the benefits of a capacity expansion through Facility 5, which will support higher volumes and operating leverage. In addition, growing global exports supported by deeper penetration in existing markets and expansion into newer geographies are expected to further diversify and strengthen our revenue base. Collectively, these drivers position us well to deliver sustained, profitable growth over the medium to long term. From the financial standpoint, our model is built on measured growth, operational discipline, and capital efficiency. Our vertically integrated structure allows us to capture value across the production chain, enhancing margins and ensuring consistency. In closing, I want to emphasize that Studs is the result of decades of perseverance, engineering focus, and a commitment to protecting riders. What began as a small partnership firm in a garage has grown into a global manufacturer of safety products, but our core values, quality, reliability, and customer centricity, remain unchanged. As India adopts higher safety norms, as consumers upgrade to premium protective gear, and as global markets increasingly recognize Indian manufacturing capabilities, we believe Studs is uniquely positioned to play a leadership role in the next phase of industry growth. Now, let me take you through the company's consolidated financial performance. Quarter 2, financial year 26. Our two-wheeler helmet and boxes volume stood at 2.07 million. EPS production stood at 2.04 million and water transfer decals at 0.36 million. Consolidated revenue stood at 154.4 crores, which grew by 6.5% year on year. EBITDA for the quarter stood at 29.9 crores, increased by 12% year on year. EBITDA margin stood at 19.3% as compared to 18.4% in quarter 2 financial year 25, which is an increase of 95 bps over last year. PAT for quarter 2 financial year 26 stood at rupees 20.6 crores as compared to rupees 17.5 crores in Q2 financial year 25, which is a growth of 17.9% year on year. PAT margin stood at 13.4% as compared to 12.1% in quarter 2 of financial year 25, which is an increase of 129 bps. Capacity utilization for two-wheeler helmet and boxes, EPS and water decals stood at 92%, 91% and 72% respectively for Q2 financial year 26. I will also talk about the half-year performance, H1 financial year 26. Our two-wheeler helmet and boxes volume stood at 3.89 million, EPS at 3.76 million and water transfer decals at 0.64 million. Consolidated revenue stood at rupees 303.7 crores, which is a growth of 6.4% year on year. EBITDA stood at rupees 60.2 crores, increased by 17.9% year on year. EBITDA margin stood at 19.8% as compared to 17.9% in H1 financial year 25, which is also an increase of 193 bps. PAT for H1 financial year 26 stood at rupees 40.9 crores as compared to rupees 33.2 crores in H1 financial year 25, which is a growth of 22.9% YOY. PAT margin stood at 13.5% as compared to 11.7% in H1 financial year 25, which is also an increase of 181 bps. Capacity utilization for two-wheeler helmets and boxes, EPS and water decals stood at 86%, 84% and 64% respectively for H1 financial year 26. With this, I open the floor for questions and answers. Operator, over to you. Thank you.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and 1 on your touchtone telephone. If you wish to withdraw yourself from the question queue, you may press star and 2. Participants are requested to use handset while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question comes from the line of Garvit Goyal with Envist Analytics Advisory. Please go ahead.
Hi, am I audible?
Yes, go ahead.
Good afternoon, sir, and congratulations for the listing. My first question is from your opening remarks. We spoke about three or four strategies that we will be looking for, including the global partnership, premium helmets, maybe focusing more on the motorcycles and the e-commerce platform, right? So I just wanted to understand, despite these four pointers, the strategy going ahead, why we are giving the conservative guidance for FY 2030, that is 1,000 CR. So that's my first question.
Okay, I think if you look at the CAGR until 2030 on a 1,000 crore plus kind of a guidance, the CAGR is about 15%-16% CAGR, right? Whereas the global market has historically over the last 5 years grown by about 6%. So we're discussing about market share growth globally. Now, expectations are that global market might increase more than this, but it's not only the market of motorcycles. You have to look at also regulatory changes across the world, right? So which happens. I would say that, yes, we have taken a conservative view. Could be better, but I think we prefer to give a guidance which is quite doable. That's how I'll put it.
And sir, what is the outlook for this year?
In terms of which numbers?
Top line and bottom line. Top line and margins, maybe.
So top line, we expect a growth of about 10%-11% over last year, YOY. And on the margin side, we expect a growth of about 22% on the bottom line.
So you are speaking about the PAT, right?
Yes, the PAT. So I would give a range actually. Anywhere between 20%-22%, absolutely. Yeah.
Got it. Got it. And sir, the newer thing, there was some announcement, some proposal regarding the mandate of the helmet for two-wheelers. So what is the current update on this side, sir?
So it was a draft regulation. So wherein at the moment in 9 states, the rule is implemented that with every motorcycle sold, you have to give the two-wheeler manufacturer gives one helmet with the motorcycle to the consumer. So there was a draft regulation of June 2025, which said instead of one helmet, you have to now give two helmets with the motorcycle sale. But as of now, there is no update because there were two aspects to this draft regulation. One was two helmets being given with the motorcycle, and the other was ABS becoming mandatory. So as per the draft regulation, the date was 1st of January 2026. There is no update on that draft regulation. So we don't know right now when that will be implemented.
Got it, sir. That's it for my side, sir, and all the best for the future. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Participants, if you wish to ask a question, you may press star and one. The next question comes from the line of Shubhankar Gupta with Equitree Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, am I audible?
Yes.
Hello. Yeah. Actually, first question is on the lines of distribution. So as of what we could see from your DRHP, I think 55%-60% of distribution happens via dealers, right? Around 360, the count. And around 15% using OEMs and 15% for export, right? That's the broader numbers. So just within this, I wanted to understand why OEMs may, are you giving them the helmets directly? And then these OEMs further give the two-wheeler to the dealer. And then you're also supplying to the dealer, right? So how does this exactly work? Is my first question.
Thank you. I'll just explain on this. So our dealers and motorcycle dealers are different. So there is a distribution network which is for helmets and accessories, and there is another retail network which is for the two-wheeler sales. So when we say our distributor network is selling, say, 57% of the split of sales is 57% from the distributors, which are the helmet distributors. That 15%, which is the OEM sales, which is slightly higher now, is actually we supply to the two-wheeler manufacturer, and they give it to their dealer. But in one case, we directly supply to their dealer also. But that's a different distribution network altogether.
Okay. So in terms of it being different, so they are giving it to the dealers who are owning those, the whole, let's say, the shop where their customers will go and buy from, right?
Yeah. So that's the motorcycles dealerships.
Motorcycle dealerships, correct. And the ones, the dealers which you are talking about, which comprise around 57%, where do they sell?
So in India, in fact, all over the world, right, helmets retail shops are separate than two-wheeler retail shops. also in India, in any city, even if you see in Bombay, there are a lot of helmet retail shops which primarily retail helmets and accessories. So these 360 distributors what we have will sell to these shops, which are primarily helmet retail shops.
Okay. Okay. Got it. Got it. Fair. Okay, that's helpful. Second is also, I just wanted some clarity on the ASP bit, average selling price per helmet, right? You mentioned that we are in the range of around 875 to 4000. So when I just did like some rough maths, around 585 crores was FY25 sales, right? And that divided by around 7.4 million, boiled down to roughly 790 rupees per helmet, right? Whereas the minimum range which you were talking about is around 875 to 4000. So just want to understand what exactly is our ASP, that's one. And second, when we benchmark this to the competitors or the larger players abroad, right, compared to, let's say, HJC or Shoei or Nolan Group, right, these international players, they are selling, their sales per helmet is much, much larger, like 10 to 12, 15x, right, differential. So why would that be? Just want to understand these two things. So first is on ASP and second versus international players.
Sure, I'll explain you about the ASP. So the price range of 875 to 4000 is the MRP. It's not our price.
Mm-hmm.
So our ASP, okay. Obviously there is a distributor and a dealer margin in between, right? So our ASP currently, as you said, is about 800 rupees, close to 800. And obviously then there is studs and SMK mix in it. So the SMK ASP is about 2340 and the studs ASP is about 700. So that's the ASP mix, okay. And the blended ASP for us would be close to 800 as you calculated, right? So that's
okay.
One. Secondly, on the bit that you talked about, international ASPs and, I mean, the competition, HJC and Shoei, right? So internationally, there are, so Shoei plays in the premium, super premium market, right? Where your average retail price in Europe could be about 800 to 900 euros. They will start from about 400 euros. And they'll have helmet up to 1500 euros, for example. This is the retail price again, I'm saying. And we play in what I call as the entry to the mid-market, right? So our helmets are priced in Europe from about 70 euros retail price going up to about 300 euros. So we are completely playing in different markets. HJC is more in the mid-market. So they'll be slightly higher than us. And Shoei will be much higher than us because they're completely in a different bucket. And we don't intend to go into that bucket. We intend to play in the bucket that we are because that's where almost 85% of the market globally is. So that's where the volumes are going to come from.
Okay, got it. That's helpful. That's helpful. I have one last question if it's okay to ask.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah, actually, the other bit of the question was on the digital sales, right? You said that the fourth strong pillar of our growth will be strengthening the e-commerce for distribution, right? So as of what I could see, around 3 to 5% of the sales are currently coming through the digital channels, right? So going forward, what are the efforts which you are making to increase that bit, and what goodness are you expecting from the same? Let's say over the next 3 to 5 years.
Okay, so I think on e-commerce we have changed our strategy from last year a little bit. If you see our offline market share, it is close to 25%. Whereas online, our market share, as you said, is much lower. Of our sales, it's about 4%, 5%. It was 4%, 5%. It's growing now. So we have changed our strategy on the product mix, what we are selling in Amazon. We are more focusing on products wherein we have more margins and we can advertise stronger. Because if we start selling everything and advertise higher, so we are going to reduce our profit there to gain market share. So the thought is we have a change in strategy, and I can't exactly tell you what the strategy is there. But we have changed our strategy wherein we are getting more revenue or more margins, I would say, from online, and we are increasing our spends online. Like this year, our spend, advertising spend online would be almost 70% higher than last year.
Got it. Got it. And have you hired like a marketing manager or some expert to kind of lead these initiatives?
Yes, we have a digital marketing head who's leading this, not only this, but he's also leading other digital things for us. So we are tracking it monthly actually. And obviously the effort is that if you, in offline, if you're 25%, online you should have a higher market share, which for us is lower. So we're constantly monitoring, and I'm confident that going forward, you'll see an improvement there.
Got it. Okay. I think that those were my questions. I'll get back in the queue. Thanks a lot.
Sure. Thanks. Thanks, Shivankar.
The next question comes from the line of Shivam Kabra with Carnelian Capital. Please go ahead.
Hello. Hello.
Yeah, hi, Shivam.
Hi, sir. Good afternoon and congratulations on successful listing. My question is, out of the revenue growth of 6% year-on-year basis, can you please bifurcate how much is growth from exports, OEMs, and distribution channel over year-on-year basis?
On year-on-year, just give me one second. So I think year-on-year export sales has grown by half year to half year if I compare. But, so it's 120% of last year. And the domestic sale is 104% of last year.
Okay. And sir, what is the reason of a slight margin dip quarter on quarter basis?
So, Shivam, I think a lot of export sales, right, was happened at the fag end of the quarter, which we could not recognize the revenue. So that was a substantial number, and that caused the margin to dip a little bit. So you would see that improvement maybe in the next quarter.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Omkar Bhambit with Finto Wealth Private Limited. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you for the opportunity. My question is on the volume side. Can you please share the breakup of units sold in the studs, SNK, Daytona and Pony?
Yeah, just give me a second. So, Omkar, I don't have the number mix. I have the revenue mix right now and the growth on the revenues, which I told to Shiva on the last, but I will get back to you on the number mix. I don't have it readily available with me.
Okay, sir. And I wanted to know what is the competition intensity in the current market, as our immediate peer is targeting 15% volume growth this year. So, what is our target of volume growth this year?
So our target of volume growth this year would be about 7 to 8%, and the revenue growth would be more than 11%, because it's also a mix, I would say a product mix play, right? If you export more, your ASPs go up. So I would assume that our volume growth this year, full year, would be anywhere between 7 to 8%, and our revenue growth would be close to 11%.
Okay. Thank you so much. And all.
Thank you.
The next question comes from the line of Shivanu with Three Head Capital. Please go ahead.
Hello, good afternoon, sir. Hope I am audible. Sir, can you tell me the volume growth this quarter, two-wheeler helmets, TPS, and water decals? This quarter, year-on-year volume growth.
Numbers. This quarter. Just one second, sir. So I will give you, I'll get back to you on the numbers. I don't have the numbers available right now on the volume.
Okay.
The
sure.
Utilization is about 80%.
Sorry, can you repeat?
The capacity utilization on half year was 86%, and on Q2 only was 91%. So there is an increase, but I don't have the exact numbers. I'll get back to you on the exact numbers.
Okay. So can you clarify one more time? What is our ASP this quarter for starts and SMK?
So this quarter ASP, I have the first quarter ASP, which was 2340 for SMK, but we haven't changed any prices. So the ASP would not have moved because of any change in price.
And for start?
For studs was about 730, close to 730 rupees.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. My last question is, can you tell me what is our this quarter export growth?
You mean Q2 or Q?
Yes, Q2 or H1? H1, both. Export growth.
So, H1, the export growth was 20%.
20% for H1 and Q2?
So, Q2, the export growth was 20%. It has gone down, and the main reason is, as I said on the call earlier, there was a lot of orders which were executed in the back end of the quarter, which we could not recognize the revenue. So overall, if I say the sales number have grown, but the revenue recognition in the balance sheet has gone down slightly. So I think the Q2 number is about Q2 26 versus Q2 25 is 102%, so 2.6% growth.
2.6%. Okay, 2.6% growth. Sir, okay. 2.6% Q2 to Q2 growth year on year.
Yes.
Sir, what will be our EBITDA margin target by 26?
EBITDA margin target by 26. So EBITDA margin, I'll tell you what the EBITDA margin was first in half year. So half year EBITDA margin is 19.8%. And we expect this margin to grow a little bit. Should be between 20 and 21%. Closer to 21%, that's my guidance on the full year number.
Okay. Okay, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Samrat Chadav with Prosperity Wealth Advisor. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening and congratulations for the listings. I have two questions. One is we have a gross margin. Our gross margin basically expanded in Q2. What kind of operational efficiencies or any kind of price strategies have drove this improvement?
I think I'll attribute it to two things. One is product mix, right? So the more you sell higher end products, obviously your COGS will go down. So your material consumption will go down, even corresponding expenses will go down. So that's part one on operational efficiency. And second, I would say the raw material prices themselves has also gone down a little bit.
Okay.
Quarter on quarter, slightly it's better. So these are the two main reasons for improving operational efficiencies.
Great. My second question is from the CapEx expansion. So our phase one, we had around 1.5 million unit capacity for the two-wheeler helmets. And I think the facility five, around Q1 25 would be operationalized, right?
Q1 26, yeah. Sorry, Q1
okay. 27. Right. Okay. And I think it's a 150 crore estimated capex there for the facility 5.
Correct. Across both the phases.
Great. So what is the estimated timeline for phase 2 and an expected ROI?
So I think phase 2 will take 15 months after the phase 1. Goes into production. So if we are in Q1 financial year 27 as the start of phase one, I would assume either quarter two or quarter three of financial year 28, the phase two will start.
Okay, great. And the expected ROI?
So if you look at historical numbers, right, our asset turnover ratio has been close to 1.8 always. I don't expect that to change too much. So the total expected capex is 150 crores and we expect revenues anywhere between 270 to 280 crores coming from that plant.
Okay, great. Okay, that's all from my side. Thank you and best of luck for the future.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is a follow-up question. It's on the line of Gurvit Koel with Envest Analytics Advisory. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for the follow-up. Sir, just wanted to understand more on the EBITDA margin. I was seeing your last 4 years. There was a dip in FY22. Can you tell us the reason, like, why there was a dip? Like, it was a big dip from 23% to 12%, and then gradually we improved, and now we are doing like 19% in first half, and you are speaking about again like 20-21% kind of margin. So also I want to understand how sustainable these margins are, which is currently maybe 20-21%, but you are guiding for FY26.
Yeah. So if you talk about financial year 22, as you said, right, financial year 21 was 21% plus of EBITDA, 22%, close to 22%, and dipped to 12%. One of the main reasons, so there were 2 years where the margins were subdued, which was financial year 22. And also if you look at 23, it was subdued. So 22, the main reason was COVID. If you remember, April, May, June of 21, the second wave had hit. So that, and absolutely there were no sales, right? We also precautionary kind of shut down plants for a few days. So where the year before that, we were making about 18 crores of PAT, right? So our PAT in 21 was 74 crores. So it was almost like 18 crores of PAT in Q1. So we incurred a loss of 7 crores in Q1 of 22. And that is the reason in dip in margins. From making profits year on year and quarter on quarter, there was no operations in factory for almost half of the quarter. So we incurred a loss of close to 7 crores that quarter. And obviously, then we had to pick it up from there in the next three quarters. So that was the reason in 22. Also in 23, the margins were subdued. They did not pick up that much. And I think 23, if you remember, there was a shipping crisis post-COVID when all the raw materials had really gone expensive. So if you see our COGS in 21 used to be 44-45%, and they went to 52% in 23. So that was one of the reasons. And there was another reason, which was a change of certification, change of standard actually, in the European standard. So we have to change some parts in our range to comply to the new standards. So these standards change every 15 to 20 years. Last change was close to 2000. So we experienced it for the first time, and we took some time to revamp our range. So if you look at our exports also, the year before it was 97 crores and it dropped to 57 crores in that year, close to 57 crores. So these are the two reasons for financial year 23. And then after that, as you said, started picking up. And now we are again to the level of financial year like 2019, 20, 21. If you look at, this was more the range that we were in. And I think I am more comfortable around this range. And I would say it's more like a steady state margins for us.
So going ahead, maybe into FY27 and onwards, what you are saying, yeah, bottom line will be growing at a pace in which our top line is growing. Is that understanding correct?
Yes. So I don't think margin expansion in terms of percentage will happen a lot unless and until the export story completely plays out very, very well, more than our expectations, right? But I would more be comfortable on commenting on the current bottom line percentages, even going forward in financial year 27-28. There might be ups and downs, but this is more steady state, as I said.
Up and down means I didn't understand it.
So you will also have years, right, where the raw material price goes down further. So if you see raw material price goes down further, your margins might expand slightly or they might reduce slightly. There will be a small range, right? But I don't expect the margins to drop to like 2022-23 levels.
So what is the major raw material for us?
So I think two factors. One is obviously exports. If the exports grow more than what we think, the margins will grow. And second is the raw material cost, how the raw material cost fluctuates. That might impact slightly, but I'm not talking about big fluctuations.
I'm asking what is the major raw material that we are using?
Major raw material. So major raw material is plastics, paints, packaging, fabrics, and foam.
And can you tell us the ratio, like how much of it we are procuring from India and how much from outside India, maybe the import?
So currently, I think we are procuring close to 85% from India and 15% is import. But the import is a strategic decision. It is not that we can't find that material in India. Sometimes, because of current geopolitical situations, you find China to be cheaper, so you would import certain raw materials. But there was a time when we used to import only about 4% raw material as well. So the materials are available, but as of now, 85% is domestic.
Okay. And lastly, I want to understand your understanding with the ban. Like, what I am understanding is we are not able to pass on the raw material prices. Is that understanding correct? And how it can improve going ahead?
No, I think we can pass on the raw material cost, provided that fluctuation is not like 2022. So I'll give you an example. So in 2021, the ABS price, which is a plastic, was about 110 rupees a kg. And because of this, after COVID, the shipping crisis, it went up to almost like 230 rupees a kg. It doubled, more than doubled. That kind of a fluctuation you cannot pass on, because that's a momentary fluctuation. But overall, if you see, we try and pass on a little bit. Like last to last year, we increased our prices by almost 10%. And last year we did not. So it also depends on how the raw material is behaving. We'll pass it on. It's not that we will pass it on every year. So if the raw material is going up on a long-term basis, we have the power to pass it on.
Got it. And annual hike will always be there, or is it depends upon the market and all?
I think it depends on the market. It depends on the raw material cost as well, right? At the moment, the raw material cost is not going up. So we might not increase anytime soon. But if it goes up, we will increase. But I would say I cannot commit that it will go up every year, the raw material, the sale cost. But product mix also, as I said, plays an important role. And I would more be, I think, ready to commit that every 2 years, there can be a price increase.
And sir, can you also comment upon the customer stickiness? Like, what is the advantage that we are having against our peers, which helps us to, even after we are doing the price hike, maybe 2 years, as you mentioned, even after that, the brand will be there. The brand will continue with their business with us.
Sorry, can you say that again? I didn't understand.
I'm just trying to understand, like, what is the competitive edge that we are having against our competitors, like, even if we are doing the price hike maybe once in a year, maybe once in 2 years. So even that case, the customers will be willing to work with us.
So I think the competitive edge, I will put on 2-3 things. First is obviously the brand recognition, right? The brand recognition for our brand, we understand, is much more than the competition, although it's now an oligopolistic market where you have three big players. But I think our brand recognition is higher. Second, just to tell you about the brand strength, right? We sell our material to the distributors with a credit of only 7 days, whereas the other brands are selling anywhere from 30 to 60 days. That's the brand pull. So one is the brand recognition. Second is the product line and the price range that we cover. That is not available with the other brands. So we try and capture customer at every price point. And obviously, it is a very discretionary kind of a product where if a person likes, right, for example, you have helmets at 1,000 rupees, you have also helmets at 3,000 rupees. Functionally, they perform the same thing. Okay, you might have small features here and there. So there is a lot of discretionary power that the customer has. So if he likes the product, he pays much more. So it's not like an industrial product, right? That's, I think, where the design of the helmet, the design and the fit of the helmet is very important. That if you stay ahead of the curve, ahead of your competition, in producing better designs, more comfortable designs, the customer is able to reward you disproportionately. So that's, I think, one more, I would say, point where we have the edge over others. Exports also, I think, we are almost more than double than the next competitor. So we have a larger distributor base. The presence is much wider. So to expand globally, we are just, I would say, we are at the right platform.
Perfect, sir. I think that's so much better and over the next. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is a follow-up question. It's from the line of Shubhankar Gupta with Equity Capital. Please go ahead.
Sure.
Yeah, hi. Actually, two lines of questioning. So first is on the domestic, in the say, source of distribution. So do you plan to keep it at similar levels of distributor versus OEMs? That is one, like around 55-60% distributors currently, and OEMs around 15%. So in the future, do you plan to change that? Any strategic decision with regards to that?
Okay. So, we don't plan to change this strategy. Our distributor relationships are very, very old, right? Some of them are as old as 40 years. I think as far as they have the reach, as they are catering to 20,000 retailers in India. As far as they have the reach, we should retain the same distributors. That's our philosophy. So you would not see a big change in distributors, maybe one or two here and there in a year, but nothing more, and we don't intend to change it. That's one. Second, because we also think that if our product is better than other products in the market, it's also the pull that you have to create from the product, because the distributor's responsibility is to place the product at the retail. But after that, the product has to sell, right? So changing distributors, also, I see it more negatively than positively. Then secondly, on your question of OEM mix, right? Unless and until there are regulatory changes, I don't think we see a major change. The current OEM last year, I think, was about 17% of our sales. Might go up a little bit. I see this going up a little bit, but it will never be like 40% of our sales.
Got it. Well, that's fair. That's on the first bit. Second bit is on the exports, right? So I think a couple of questions which I wanted clarity on. First is on the impact of tariffs. I'm sure there would be some impact. So can you give clarity there? And similarly on exports, so why not some other players will be able to catch up? So what is our edge when it comes to the export market versus players in India? Not talking of export, like globally, global players, which are, more premium.
Sure. So, on the tariff bit, yes, so we have had tariff impact recently in the U.S., where a couple of containers have been tariffed, and we see that, and we have increased our prices, although not to the extent of the tariff. Tariff is 50%. We have increased our prices almost like 15% in the U.S. So we expect that to hit us a little bit in the short term, but we are put on the strategy on U.S. long term. So we don't see this tariff thing playing out for a very long term. And in any case, right, if you look at China's tariff in U.S., which is our major competitor, it is also 55%. So it's not very different. So we are almost in the same boat.
Okay.
So if you look at our numbers, right, this is the first half year that we have given profit out of the U.S. subsidiary. Till now, it was in loss. So there is a profit of $21,000 in the subsidiary. So we have been able to gain momentum, but yes, tariff will cause a little bit of concern in the short term, but we are ready to stick to it. And as I said, right, we'll see, because the scale is not very large. Our revenue expectations this year from the U.S. subsidiary is close to $850,000, right? So even if there is a hit, it will not be very large for us in terms of bottom lines on the consolidated side. And I think on the second question, on the second question about the competition landscape on export side from India. So if you look at the global market, right, global market has been growing at about 5%-6%, motorcycle helmet market. Whereas Indian exports over the last 5 years have grown by a CAGR of 21%. It's not only us, it's everybody put together, right? So I think one of the other manufacturers is also growing on exports. So it's not that we are growing, they are not growing, but maybe we are growing faster. That's the only difference.
And why would that be?
I think presently we have more distributors. We are present in more countries. We have a wider product mix. I think our product lineup for SMK might be double in terms of models than the other two. So obviously, you have a complete range which you can cater to, and you have presence across markets, so you are growing faster.
Got it. So I think what you initially said, right, like helmet dealers is different from OEM and dealers. Similar kind of this thing happens globally also, right?
No. So this law of giving one helmet free with a motorcycle only exists in India and to some part Indonesia. But other places, helmet sales happens from helmet retail channel, which is different from the two-wheeler retail channel. Although two-wheeler dealerships do keep some helmets globally in Europe, US, Latin America, but the sales are very low because it's not obligatory for them to give it to the consumer. So I would say the export market plays out slightly different than India.
Okay, got it. But that distribution access access to the distributors is again one of the modes, right? Variety plus access is something that you are seeing.
Yeah.
For us.
Yeah.
Got it, got it. Okay, that's helpful. Thank you.
Sure.
The next question comes from the line of Lakshmi Narayan with Tunga Investments. Please go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to understand your regional mix in terms of sales, excluding the OE sale. And second, what is the mix of revenues as well as volumes between urban cities and non-urban cities, non-urban locations?
Okay. So I think on the geography mix, we our sales are more than 20% in all the four zones. If I divide India into northeast, west, south, you will not see our sales to be lower than 20% anywhere. So it's quite well distributed. That's, I think, one of the strengths that we have, that, for example, one of the other brands is north dominated, the other one is south dominated. We are well covered pan-India. On your question, the other question was about... sorry, can you say that again? Another question.
Yeah, urban cities, and if you look at the top 10 cities in India, what would be your revenue contribution from the top 10 cities?
So it would be distorted because it's a distribution model, right? So I might tell you that my Lucknow dealer, or for example, a Kochi dealer, would be very high in number, but that doesn't mean the retail is happening there. So because they would be distributing to the rural areas as well. If you need, I can send you that number. I don't have it right now available. But again, I'll say it will not be presenting the exact final retail sale.
Got it, got it. And there has been, I think, a possible price reduction among a lot of your raw materials like the ABS, etc. Right, so now is that driven by some BIS standard removal for all this polystyrene, etc.? That's what I'm told. Does it make us look for better margins in the next two quarters?
Yeah, you're completely right that the raw materials are going down right now, and we expect the margins to be slightly better. But again, with the current geopolitical situation, right, everything is very volatile. I would not be able to comment on a long-term basis, but yeah, at the moment, as you said, the raw material, the trend is going down. And it's mainly, I think, a demand-supply issue that styrene, which is very important for plastics, right, what we use, is on a downward trend. And also, I think China and Taiwan are kind of under stress to sell their capacities. So we think that the price is currently, the trend is down, might stay down for a while.
And in terms of price determination, there are, it's, as you said, it's oligopolistic, right? So what kind of, I mean, how the pricing happens? Is it like you take the price lead or somebody takes it? Or, I mean, how does it happen in general? How it has happened in the last few years? Any price correction upwards or downwards?
The last 20 years, I can say that we have been the leaders. We always initiate the price change. If we don't change, nobody changes. So that also tells you about the strength of the brand. And I think currently also the situation is the same, that if the competition, they want to change prices, increase especially, decrease, yes, they can do. But if they want to increase prices, they will typically wait for us to go in that direction.
Got it. And I see in your presentation that you have put something on innovation. And there is also the, and I could see in pockets, there are these smart helmets coming up. Now, what is your proposition there? Are you seeing this trend going up in terms of smart helmets? And if so, what kind of price point you have it?
So, yeah, I'm, to be honest, optimistic on the smart helmets. On the domestic side, I'm not very sure because of the audibility rules in India for helmets. Right? So, there is an audibility test. Now, if you have a Bluetooth and you switch on the Bluetooth, obviously the audibility level changes inside the helmet. But that's something which is more regulatory, I would say. Globally, we see an uptick on the smart helmets, but there have been a lot of developments, right, in terms of intercoms, Wi-Fi mesh, cameras. But the real thing which has just picked up till now is pure Bluetooth, where people want to hear music and they want to have a call. The intercoms, I don't think even sell 10% of the Bluetooth in terms of volume. So I think this is how the industry will move forward, that in a few years, a major part of your sales will come either from people who are wanting to fit an external Bluetooth into the helmet, or they are buying an already fitted helmet, already Bluetooth fitted helmet.
Got it. And last question is that you have multiple product lines within helmet itself. Now, what kind of profitability model you have? To just reframe, what is your profitability block? Do you actually look at profitability by a type of broad SKUs like the slip-on ones, or do you actually look at it from two different brands? You say that, look, I want to just make some gross margin or an EBITDA margin at these two large brand level. What is your unit of profitability? How do you look
I'll say that again. I'll repeat it again. So we look at profitability channel-wise. So export channel has the highest profitability for us, and followed by domestic market and online, which is almost at the similar profitability levels. And OEM is the lowest profitability channel for us.
Okay. And do you also say that, look, I want to make X profitability in this particular stream of SKUs? Is that something which you look for? Or you are okay with the overall profitability by channel and it doesn't matter which mix it comes in?
No, we monitor the profitability product-wise, model-wise, not SKU-wise, I would say model-wise. But yes, in certain, for example, in OEM channel, you cannot, even if you try, you cannot get the profitability of an export channel. So although we try to maintain profitability product-wise, but channel is a better representation because there are restrictions across certain channels to increase profitability.
Got it. This is helpful. Thank you so much.
Sure.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that was the last question for today. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Siddharth for closing comments.
Thank you all for joining us today. We hope we have addressed your questions and provided valuable insights into our performance and strategy. If you have any further queries or need additional information, please feel free to reach out to our team or our investor relations advisors at SGA. Thank you.
On behalf of IIFL Capital, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines. Thank you.